central bank digital currencies, digital IDs, artificial intelligence, and big tech surveillance. What does our digital future really look like? Join me, Alastair Harding, for a look into our digital future every Wednesday on Paul Brennan's Breakfast Show, right here on Reality Check Radio. Welcome to another edition of Our Digital Future on Reality Check Radio. My name is Alastair Harding, and today I have with me the renowned Israeli independent journalist Efrat Fenningson. Because over the past few weeks, as we explored the subject of our digital future, I've found that it's impossible not to be at least a little bit overwhelmed. The dystopian possibilities of CBDCs, digital IDs, and big tech data surveillance are positively horrifying. We're talking about geofencing, wallet locking, and programmability, which make these technologies sound more like a digital prison than a digital future. And we've done it all in the shadow of our Reserve Bank's latest call for submissions on their New Zealand CBDC, in the hope that our listeners will be able to make informed submissions on the subject before the deadline on July 26. But while much of what we've talked about does have a dystopian air to it, are we fear-mongering by talking about all the what-ifs? And that's why I wanted to get Efrat on today, because she's an independent journalist who sits through the countless hours of briefings and panel discussions that bankers and globalists and politicians hold all over the world. And when she does that, she compares what they say to what they do, then gathers it all together on her Substack, titled You're the Voice, for us to read and decide for ourselves. It's a job our mainstream media should be doing, but they're not. And so today on Our Digital Future, we're going to talk to Efrat about the context of the times we live in, but also the proof of why we should be worried, particularly about the CBDCs. But I also wanted Efrat to come on with me today to talk about the positives too, that are now revealing themselves, like how the CBDCs are being met with resistance all over the world, and also how the likes of Bitcoin could provide us with a way out of it all. So to talk about all of that and so much more, I'd now like to welcome you to Our Digital Future on Reality Check Radio, Efrat Fenningson.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Okay, so to start with, at the beginning of the COVID era, when I was realizing that something was happening that we weren't being told about, that I couldn't explain, I spoke to a friend of mine and I asked him, why are they doing this? It appears that they're causing some sort of irreversible damage. And I'm no economist, but even I could see that locking people in their homes and forcing businesses to close and destroying the middle class and injecting vast amounts of money into the system wasn't going to end well. And he said to me, very matter-of-factly, I'll never forget, he said, they're just trying to collapse the financial system. And it stayed with me ever since, and I've thought about it a lot, and now I see that you've written about this also recently in Bitcoin magazine in a story titled On the Brink of a Dramatic Change, the Digitalization of Money. And in this story, you talk about the crashing of the financial system and what it means for laying the groundwork for CBDCs.
That's right. And the surprising thing is that it's not hidden anymore. Again, people would tend to call it a conspiracy theory that we are going into a new world order, right? Every time someone says the term new world order, you're being looked at as if you're this tinfoil hatter. But really, you get the biggest politicians and public servants and even unelected public officials sitting on big stages in conferences and summits around the world speaking exactly that. So just to give you an example, you get a person like Pippa Malmgren. She's an advisor for different presidents in the past, and she's the daughter of the person that was the advisor for Nixon and Kennedy and Ford when she was growing up. And she's sitting there in the World Government Summit, and she's saying in her speech, what underpins a world order is always the financial system. And she's saying, we are on the brink of a dramatic change where we are about to, and I'll say this boldly, abandon the traditional system of money and accounting and introduce a new one. She's saying it like that.
Okay, I've got that clip here of what you're talking about. Let's have a listen and then come back and talk about it. This is Philippa Malmgren, at the World Government Summit of 2022.
What underpins a world order is always the financial system. I was very privileged. My father was an advisor to Nixon when they came off the gold standard in 71. And so I was brought up with a kind of inside view of how very important the financial structure is to absolutely everything else. And what we're seeing in the world today, I think, is we are on the brink of a dramatic change where we are about to, and I'll say this boldly, we're about to abandon the traditional system of money and accounting and introduce a new one. And the new one, the new accounting, is what we call blockchain. It means digital. It means having a almost perfect record of every single transaction that happens in the economy, which will give us far greater clarity over what's going on. It also raises huge dangers in terms of the balance of power between states and citizens. In my opinion, we're going to need a digital constitution of human rights if we're going to have digital money. But also, this new money will be sovereign in nature. Most people think that digital money is crypto and private, but what I see are superpowers introducing digital currency. The Chinese were the first. The US is on the brink, I think, of moving in the same direction. The Europeans have committed to that as well. And the question is, will that new system of digital money and digital accounting accommodate the competing needs of the citizens of all these locations so that every human being has a chance to have a better life? Because that's the only measure of whether a world order really serves.
What are we talking about here? A complete change in world order.
Yes. I every time I hear that speech, I'm flabbergasted.
Is she talking about changing governments? Is she talking about
no,
the way we govern ourselves?
It's way bigger than that. It's way bigger than that. It's changing the monetary system. So most people are not even aware of how their money works and how their money is being created. And they don't even stop to ask the question, the very simple question, what is money? We just take it for granted, just like the oxygen we breathe. And so when we talk about replacing a monetary system, we have to ask, what is the current monetary system that is dictating each and every action that we take in our daily lives? We don't even stop to consider that. And that system is called the fiat system. And the fiat system is a system, fiat in Latin means let it be so, meaning the sovereign is saying, I decide the rules and I'm the one with the authority to create the money. And therefore, whatever I say happens. And so it's by decree. It's by the fact that I have the power. I am the one that is able to dictate how the money will work. That's the construct of power being put in the hands of the legislator. And so the fiat system is based on trust. It's a system where the citizens are basically giving the governor the ability to create the money, to dictate how the money will be used, and to enforce the rules around the money. And I think that what's important for people to understand, because we can't go into a very deep discussion about fiat money at the moment, but just the really high level principles of that system, is that this system, the fiat system, is stealing from us every day. How? Through inflation and through taxation. These two principles of inflating the money supply always are inherent. Principle is it's an inherent principle into the system. The second one is taxation. You're being taxed all the time, again, in order to inflate, to increase the size of the money supply. The system is based on debt. It's a debt-based economy. And it means that every new money that is being created in the system is created through debt. Now, most people think that money is created through the central bank, meaning the central bank is just printing money. And that is correct. They are printing money, but that's not the only way. So the first way is for the central bank to print fresh money and then lend that money to the commercial banking system. So all the commercial banks are then taking that money that they got from the central bank. And what are they allowed to do with that money? They are authorized by the law to then take that money that they have received from the central bank and exercise a system that is called the fractional reserve system. Fractional reserves mean that they can keep a small reserve in their bank, and the rest they can lend with interest. Again, the same debt creation. And basically, when you come to the bank and you say, I've got $100, I want to give you my $100 so that you keep it. And I have to pay you for doing that, but that's another story. But please keep my $100. What they do is they take your $100 and they save 10. And then the 90, they are able to then lend your 90 to someone else with interest, and they create money out of nothing. So out of your 100, they just created 190. And then the same thing continues to roll out, because the 90 that another person has been given is then going to another bank and he's saying, hey, I want you to keep my $90. And they take the 90, they keep 10, and they give the next 80 to the next person in line. And so very, very quickly, out of $100, you can create $10,000 in no time. And that's the ability of the fractional reserve system of the commercial banking system. Now, 96% of the money in circulation is being created like that. It's being created money out of nothing, out of thin air. And that's fiat, all because we trust the system to do this for us. But if we all come to the bank at the same time now and say, hey, I want my $100, I want my money that I gave you, but everyone will come at the same time to do this with the bank will collapse. And that's what's called a bank run, right? Because they don't have the actual reserve. It's based on a fractional reserve. And so the money system and the banking system is based on trust. There is nothing behind it. Unlike in the gold standard, where they actually had gold reserves in the bank to cover up for the fiat currency or the IOU that they would print, which again is also not a great a great solution, because it would dictate a centralization of power by the banks, right? But let's pretend it's better, okay? You still had the problem of creating money out of nothing and have nothing behind it to cater for it, and so we're basically living in a system, a fiat system, that is making us weaker. It's making us dependent. It's making us surveilled. And the control mechanisms of that system, the fiat system, are reaching new peaks of sophistications because of, or thanks to, the advancements in technology and the imbalanced power and incentive structures that exist. And CBDC is taking us one step further to take that fiat system, basically take everything that is bad about fiat and add more surveillance control, more censorship, and more enforcement capabilities to the money that we know today. Okay, so CBDC is like the improvement of the fiat system. It's fiat on steroids. That's how I call it. And some people would say, so what are you basically saying? Is that like a prison system? I say that this is a modern prison system. It's like the ultimate prototype of a prison without physical chains, right? So whether you choose it or not, if you're on the fiat standard today, you will be converted to a CBDC system in the future.
And for those of you who are listening to Our Digital Future for the first time, and you may not have heard about all the functions of a CBDC, one of the biggest things that Ifrat is talking about there is the programmability of a CBDC. You can put expiration dates onto the money. You can geofence the money so that you can only spend it in a particular area or a place. You can have wallet locking functions as well. And in one of the clips that we played a couple of weeks ago in a previous interview with Catherine Austin Fitz, we actually heard the head of the Bank of International Settlements, Augustin Karstens, talk about that. And the way that he said it was that CBDCs are all about controlling the money. But with that also, I want to talk about trust for a moment, because money's always been about trust. That's the foundation stone of money. And I've also read quotes from the same man, Augustin Karstens, saying exactly that. In a speech recently at the People's Bank of China, he stated, I quote, "Trust ensures that money can serve as an effective medium of exchange." In other words, he said, trust is the soul of money and central banks are its best guardians. And I've also had guests on saying the same thing, that if central banks were to make use of these programmability functions and make CBDCs into a digital prison, that there would be no demand for the CBDC, that it's all about trust and they wouldn't want to destroy that. There would be no value in the CBDC if they did that. What do you say to that argument?
That's a very naive way to look at it for several reasons. First of all, when someone has the power and the underlying set of values of that entity is one of corruption and greed, which central bankers and governments have shown us many, many times in the past that they are based on those foundations, then, you know, if you think that when an entity has a monopoly on power, it will not use it to abuse some of your human rights and violate some of your privileges, then you're naive. That's one of my claims. We've seen it happening during COVID. We're seeing it happening in many other areas of our lives now with the farmers being violated of their property rights. We're seeing it happening with the climate change, you know, different taxes that are being put on us in order to save Earth or whatever kind of excuse or emergency or crisis they will bring about in order to justify the violation of our human rights. So if you really believe that when you give an entity like a government or a central bank the power to have a monopoly over the creation and the management of your wealth, they will not abuse it, then, you know, go ahead and believe them. Now, the second reason why I think this is naive is because, technically speaking, you won't have the choice of not using it when, you know, push comes to shove and bad things happen and you look and you finally understand that this system may be bad for you. You may want to say, okay, I don't want to use it anymore. But what if they have orchestrated things in such a way that your salary is now being paid in CBDC, right? Can you just say to your employer, I don't want to receive my salary anymore? Can you stop working? I mean, you can, of course you can. Many people have done that during COVID, but then it's your livelihood that you're putting at risk. That's one thing that can happen. And the central bankers have already revealed to us that they are going to do it. For example, in Israel, in one of the recent white papers, the central bank said that they're going to roll it out gradually and they're going to start with public sector employees. They're going to get their salaries. And we're talking about a high percentage of employees in the state of Israel that are going to receive their salaries in CBDC. In China, the public sector is already receiving salaries in CBDC. So that's one way of coercing you indirectly to not leave that system. Another way is to give that money to low income earners, people who really need the money. Right? Like people that are relying on welfare and different subsidies from the government. And without that kind of money, they will not be able to survive. So that's the second thing that they said. They'll roll it out through subsidies, taxation. They'll tell you that you have to pay your taxes in CBDC. What are you going to do? Not have it? You're not going to pay taxes anymore? You're going to end up in jail. And then what about fines? What about different bills that you have to pay to your municipality, right? They have said that this is the way they're going to roll it out gradually. So if you think that you'll be able to just stop using it, I think you're naive. The last thing I would say is they're going to basically switch the infrastructure in the back end on your existing payment systems. So if today you're used to paying for things using your credit card or your wearables or your payment apps, they're not going to touch that. You're still going to continue to use that. The only thing they will swap is in the background, they'll swap it from normal digital fiat to CBDC. And then, you know, it will be transparent to you as an end user and you'll just continue to use it.
One of the problems I have when I talk about these subjects is that a lot of the time it is conjecture. It's us looking into crystal balls and trying to figure out how they're going to do it. But all of those examples that you're talking about, they're actually happening in different places around the world with different CBDC trials, aren't they? I mean, for instance, the example of Thailand. Can you tell our listeners about that one, about how they geofenced it and they put an expiry date on it and all of that? You know, this is an example of exactly how they will do it. And we've got concrete proof of it happening.
That's right. So in Thailand in 2023, they launched a pilot where 10,000 people received free money. Basically, they were bribed with $280, which is about 10,000 baht. And it's a lot of money for the average Thai, especially low income earners that they were targeting. It had an expiry date of 6 months on the money, and they could use it only in a 4 kilometers radius from their house. Geofence of 4 kilometers radius where they can spend the money. So basically, those technological abilities of the system, of the CBDC system, like geofencing and expiry dates, were already exercised for those 10,000 people in Thailand. Now, due to the success of that pilot, the Thai government has decided to launch in the end of 2024 a digital token payout of again, $280 per person, but this time for 50 million lower income earners. And their excuse is that it's aimed to encourage them to spend the money in their local communities. And that's basically a $13.7 billion plan. It's huge money that is basically going to be created out of nothing and being given to people just to encourage them to lure into the CBDC system. Now, I think that that method of stimulating the economy by printing fresh fiat for CBDC is something that we're going to see more and more of. So Thailand is a classic example of how you're already doing that with people. And there are other countries that are doing similar things, like Hungary, for example. They have decided to roll out their CBDC plan for students. And students are able to receive some free money from the government through a special CBDC app that them and their parents can access. And the government said openly that this is the way they're doing it with students is because they want to target the future users of CBDCs as the first section of society that they're planning to bring it about. In Israel, we also see one example where the Central Bank of Israel is doing right now a hackathon for different financial institutions to implement real life use cases of CBDC. And they're telling them that they can use all the different functions that they've written in the code of the CBDC in Israel. And one of those functions is called freeze wallet. So they have the ability to freeze your wallet. And they're telling you that one good example of using that is for parental control. If a parent wants to limit their child's use of money, which sounds very innocent, but if the government then has the ability to freeze your wallet, why would they stop to use it only for parental control and not continue using it for any other excuse?
Imagine if Justin Trudeau had that function available to him during the truckers' protest.
Perfect.
Another thing which I think about when I look through these examples, another one is Nigeria.
Yes.
And here in New Zealand, as our Reserve Bank is asking us for feedback, is asking us for submissions on the CBDC that they're preparing for launch here in 2030, they tell us that this will not replace cash. And like all these other promises, it won't do this and it won't do that and it won't replace cash. In Nigeria, they did use it to replace cash, didn't they? Can you tell us about that one? Because that didn't end good, did it?
That's right. That's right. That's actually quite a sad story. And you see the trend of going cashless hand in hand with bringing about CBDC. It's happening in many places around the world, and that's not a coincidence. It's happening on purpose. And to be honest, I don't think that they're going to abolish cash completely, not in the next few years anyway. They're probably going to keep cash, but for very, very small amounts of transacting. They're going to limit the amounts of deals that you can do, business transactions that you can do with cash. But what happened in Nigeria, it's the first African nation to launch a CBDC about 3 years ago. The name of the CBDC in Nigeria is eNaira. That didn't exactly take off and succeed. The citizens took to the streets to protest on the abolition of cash because they did it at the same time. They abolished cash completely. They said no more cash for you. And it's Africa, and it's a huge country, right, of 226 million people in the population. So one day they simply said no more cash, and your notes are not worth anything anymore, and you can't use them anywhere. And the citizens took to the streets and they started demonstrating. Many people became hungry and some people died because they couldn't survive without cash. And very quickly it became a chaos. There were long queues on ATMs and the banks, and there were looting and different things. It stayed like that for several weeks. And the people demanded the return of cash. So after a long and painful period of protesting, cash was returned alongside the eNaira, which was not canceled and became a part of reality. But during that time, many Nigerians were looking for different ways of surviving. So many of them resorted to Bitcoin as a way to continue transacting and continue living. I think the good thing that happened out of it is that today we're seeing, from a recent report of the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, that the eNaira to date has accounted for only about $20 million worth of transactions, which is very, very low. And only 13 million eNaira wallets have been created out of a total population of 226 million. And most of these wallets, about 98% of them, are inactive today. So they're not using the eNaira. Now, the fact that they're not using it and the fact that it didn't succeed, this is what I always say to people to be cautious about, doesn't mean that the government will not try again in a different way. So they're currently working on another way of it, reintroducing it through a stable coin called CNGN, which is, again, another digital token. So this is one thing people have to remember about governments. They can take their time with rolling out these things. It's not just a sprint and that's it. They have a marathon to play, and they have the patience and the resources to do it. And so if they failed one battle, it doesn't mean that they're not going to win the war.
In that case of Nigeria, Bitcoin usage skyrocketed, didn't it?
Yes.
Is Bitcoin the answer to the CBDC problem?
Right. It's a very good question. And we started talking before about trust, right? We were talking about the fact that a monetary system requires you to trust the person who is issuing the money, or the entity that is issuing the money, in our case, the central banks. So in Bitcoin, this is one of the fundamental differences between Bitcoin and fiat currencies. Bitcoin does not require you to trust anyone. Instead, it's based on mathematical rules and the rules of physics, which are time-based, right? So every 10 minutes, a new block is created on the blockchain, and a new currency is being created, a new Bitcoin is being created every 10 minutes. And the users on the system do not have to trust anyone or anything, because this is a completely decentralized system. It's not centralized with the power in the hands of one CEO or one banker or one entity that is issuing the money. The money is actually being mined or created on the blockchain, which is laid out on top of the open internet out there, which is completely distributed and decentralized on thousands of servers, which are called nodes in the Bitcoin language, around the internet, the open internet. So no one can take it down. Even if you took down one part of the blockchain, you'll have other redundancies on other parts. And so it will be able to continue functioning. There is no CEO for the Bitcoin company. There is no banker that is issuing it and deciding on how much can be created. And Bitcoin, unlike fiat, has a fixed supply, where fiat, you can keep inflating the system and creating more and more, and therefore creating more debt, and therefore creating more deficit for countries or personal debt for people. In Bitcoin, you cannot do that. There is a fixed supply of 21 million Bitcoin. You can never have more than 21 million. And when you have such a limited supply of the asset, the only thing that can change is the price. So the price can keep going up and up for every Bitcoin that exists in the system. And when people think that it's too late to come into Bitcoin, that's a mistake, because Bitcoin is allocated in units of 100 million Satoshis for every one Bitcoin. And so you can always buy Bitcoin, even for $1,000 that you have spare. Okay, I have $1,000. I can buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. I don't have to buy a full Bitcoin. And the last thing about Bitcoin that I would say is that it allows you to have control over your assets, right? The government cannot take your Bitcoin. It's in your possession. It's in self-custody. If you take care to bring it to your own self-custody, then you're the sovereign. You're the one that decides what happens with your wealth. You don't have to ask for a permission, not from the government and not from the bank.
Okay, but do people actually use it to buy and sell things, or is it just a speculative asset still at the moment?
Well, if you look at Bitcoin like the internet, because it's a decentralized system that is very similar to the internet, then where we are in the life cycle of this system is very similar to where we were with the internet in the 90s, when we just started with emails and, you know, it was really early days of the system. And so Bitcoin today, its best use case is store of value. It's where you want to store your value, like digital gold, for example. And the use of Bitcoin for medium of exchange is basically the next use case that is coming down the pike. And if you look at places like, we talked about Nigeria, we talked about other third world countries, or even other places in the world that are suffering hyperinflation, like Venezuela, Argentina, Turkey, Lebanon, Egypt, take all of these places, even China. The use of Bitcoin for day-to-day transaction is amazing. It's already used as a medium of exchange, not just as a store of value. So the use is already there. It's just going to slowly and gradually ripple throughout the different countries based on their economical stages.
Okay, I just want to go back to CBDCs to finish up with, because that's all good news to hear about Bitcoin and to hear your points of view
right.
on that.
Right.
There's also other good news about CBDCs. There's been pushback all over the world against them, hasn't there?
Yeah, that's right. Well, not all over the world, to be honest. We have to be realistic about it. I think that we need more people to actually take action and resist or object. Even if just to show those central bankers and those governments that we do not accept that new reality that they are preparing for us. But yeah, we do see some signs of resistance and objections to CBDC. For example, in the US, you're seeing the governor of Florida, the governor of South Dakota, the presidential candidates, Robert F. Kennedy, and also even Trump, all speaking against CBDCs and even creating state laws against them, which are very good news. The most recent one is a law in Louisiana that we've seen just a few days ago, where Louisiana passed a bill. It's basically saying that they're defending Bitcoin rights and banning CBDCs at the same time, which is a real precedent for the first time. So people who hold Bitcoin in Louisiana are able to take it into self-custody, and the state is protecting them and also banning CBDC from ever being used or created in Louisiana.
And they're not the only ones.
No.
In the past 2 years, I've got written down here in my notes, Indiana, Florida, South Dakota, North Dakota, Tennessee, Nebraska, Alabama, Georgia, and Utah have all enacted laws that either exclude CBDCs from the definition of money or prohibit state agencies from accepting or acquiring CBDCs for payment. And then recently, I've got a clip here to play.
Mm-hmm.
I'll play it, and then we can discuss after that. But this is Republican politician Tom Emmer, and he's talking about how he introduced legislation banning CBDCs in the USA to the House of Congress. And here he is now talking about that. The reason I want to play this is because he articulates so well exactly our problems that we have with a CBDC. And this is a man who's talking about this at the heights of government. So here he is now, Tom Emmer, the Republican politician from the United States, talking about legislation banning CBDCs in the USA.
This week, House Republicans, as Blake just said, are going to take action to safeguard our American values by passing my bill, the CBDC, the Central Bank Digital Currency Anti-Surveillance State Act. With this legislation, we're going to stop unelected bureaucrats in the Biden administration from using a central bank digital currency, again, a CBDC, that threatens to destroy the American way of life. Unlike decentralized digital assets such as Bitcoin, CBDCs are a digital form of sovereign currency designed, issued, and monitored by the federal government. In short, a CBDC is a government-controlled, programmable money that, if not designed to be just like cash, open, permissionless, and private with a capital P, it not only could, it will give the federal government significant transaction level data on individuals and the ability to suppress politically unpopular activity. We've already seen examples of foreign governments weaponizing their financial system against their citizens. Close to home in the Western Hemisphere, Canada froze the bank accounts of hundreds of truckers protesting the vaccine mandate in 2022. If you think it can't happen, think again.
So all isn't really lost, is it, Ifrat?
That's right.
People at that level of That's government right. are talking about what we're talking about?
You know what? That really gives me hope, because what this Republican guy is doing is basically, in my eyes, the way I perceive it, is trying to reverse history that was created more than 100 years ago with the creation of the Federal Reserve Act in the U.S. in 1913. In a small island out of Georgia called the Jekyll Island, where they really, there was a secret meeting of some of the world's wealthiest people, Americans that have been representing the elite families around the world, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Morgans, etc. They all met up together and they decided that they are going to control the money through a centralized system, a centralized power that will become the what's called the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, people think that the Federal Reserve Bank is federal. It's the state, the federal government's entity, and it's not. It's a private entity. That what they did is they took the bill that they wrote for the Federal Reserve Act and they passed it into Congress. In some sneaky way, they bought Congress and they managed to pass that bill into a law that gives power into this private entity that until today has the biggest power in the world to create and manage money for all of us under the fiat system. And so Republican Senator Emmer is doing there is really speaking about that those fundamental powers that the bankers, the central bankers of the world, and specifically in the United States with the Federal Reserve have, which are out of control. They have abused their power too much. And he knows, and the people behind him know, that if they take it one step further with CBDCs, they will abuse those powers even more. And that is a real danger, not just to democracy, but to society as a whole. And so I think that the fact that he has called this bill Anti-Surveillance Act shows a lot, right? They know that this is a surveillance tool. And they want the opposite, the anti-surveillance. He talks about when what you just showed us is he talks about Bitcoin being completely decentralized. It's the opposite. It's the complete opposite of a CBDC. And he talks about the fact that this is, we need money that is permissionless. What does it mean? Just think about it for a second. Permissionless. We do not need permission from anyone to use our money. This is our innate right. Right? As sovereign human beings, we should have the freedom to choose what kind of money we use, where we use it, how we use it, how much of it we use. And we don't need permission from anyone, not the state, not the government, and not the bank, to use it. Because this is ours and we are working very hard to make it. So I think this bill, if it passes finally, because now it's in the last stages of passing in the United States, it will be an amazing news for the whole world.
Yes, and for me, as I look at the time and I realize that we're almost out of time, I feel like we've almost come full circle. We started with that clip from the World Government Summit from 2022, the clip of Philippa Malmgren talking about the profound change that is upon us in our financial system. But all this talk about CBDCs, all it's really doing is forcing people to confront the dystopian possibilities. It's causing people like you and me to sit here today and talk about it. And because of that, it's also causing politicians like Tom Elmer to introduce legislation to ban CBDCs. And perhaps because of that, perhaps if we finish on this note, that perhaps we will get that fundamental, profound change. But it just won't be the type of change that Philippa Malmgren was talking about.
Yes, definitely. I hope so. I hope that what these unelected bureaucrats are planning for us is going to go down the drain. I hope that even if they launch those different technological systems called CBDCs in different forms and shapes, and you know they're going to give it some fancy brand names and play around with it to make you feel like it's the best thing since sliced bread, just like they did with COVID vaccines. I hope that when that happens, they'll fail dismally, not just technologically, but also with the resistance that we're going to see from the grassroots movements. And I think that it's important to know that while we are going to push back against this by speaking out, by speaking with our politicians, with doing different actions, like in the UK, they did 50,000 signatures on a petition to the Sunak government against CBDC. So people are doing things. And while it's important to do that, we must remember that there are currently 110 countries around the world that are experimenting with CBDCs. And their responsibility is ours to do something about this. And if we vote with our feet and actually take our wealth out of this fiat system and put it into a separate parallel system that is permissionless, that is not governed by anyone, that we don't need to receive approval to use it, that we can be free to transact between each other, peer to peer, with no jurisdiction between us, then I think we're going to bring back the power to us, to the real sovereign, which are the people.
And with that, I have to thank you very much, Efrat, because it's so easy with this discussion to finish with the whole we're doomed, we're going to be locked up in a digital prison thing. As I said at the top of the show, it's so easy to get overwhelmed by this stuff. So thanks for joining us today. It's fantastic to hear your thoughts and also hear you share your wealth of knowledge that you have on this topic.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the chance.
That's Efrat Fenningson, the fearless Israeli independent journalist, here to talk to us today about CBDCs and the context of the drive for them by central banks all around the world. But also Bitcoin and some of the good news from around the world that tells us that the faceless bureaucrats are not necessarily getting their own way. And you can hear more and read more of Efrat's work at Substack by searching there for @Efrat. That's the symbol at, E-F-R-A-T. And you'll find her Substack channel there, which is called You're the Voice. If this series has taught us anything, it's that the digital world we're being herded into of programmable CBDCs and digital IDs and big tech surveillance and manipulation is scary for its ability to surveil us and manipulate us and force us to comply. But what did we expect? Those are all the things digital technologies can do. So why would we be surprised? What we need to do is not be frightened and cowed by it, but rather we need to be spurred into action by it. This month, on July 26, submissions to our Reserve Bank will close on the topic of our New Zealand CBDC that they plan on launching around 2030. So if you're worried about anything that we have spoken about on our digital future, you need to speak up now. If we don't want our money program to geofence us and force us to spend it before some arbitrary expiry date, we need to tell them now that it's important that laws are passed to ensure that never happens. And if we're worried about being tracked and traced and surveilled by our government, then we need to demand now that there are safeguards in place to ensure that never happens. We're now on the cusp of a digital revolution that is going to change our lives forever. Digitization of everything is happening, which also makes it a fight for democracy and freedom. If those things mean something to you, please get on the Reserve Bank website and put in your submission today. My name is Alistair Harding, and you've been listening to Our Digital Future only on Reality Check Radio.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.